Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. It's Thursday, so this is an archive show, first published as a newspaper column and podcast episode sometime in the last 10 years. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy it. This is the story of a gang of Goldfield bandits, the Triscuit Gang, specifically, which underestimated the citizens of Sailor's Diggin' something fierce. This became a fatal error when they went on a shooting spree downtown, but the $75,000 they stole has never been recovered. I should mention that this is a piece of Goldfield folklore. How much of it is true, I cannot vouch for. But it's a very interesting story. And it was first published on June 26th of 2011. Here we go. After a former Oregon farmer found gold at Sutter's Mill in 1848 and started the California Gold Rush, people from Oregon started racing southward to grub it out of the ground. The next year, people from the East Coast raced westward with the same idea. By the year after that, it was getting hard to find a good patch of pay dirt that didn't already have a miner or two working it. New prospects might spend years poking around little mountain creeks before finding one worth working, and prospecting was hard work. Increasingly, people started to realize there were actually several different ways a fellow could work the diggins. One could look for gold the old-fashioned way, of course. But one could also go into business selling stuff at inflated prices to prospectors. Many Oregon farmers got very rich this way. There was another way, too. One could simply make a $5 investment in one of those newfangled .44 caliber Colt Dragoon revolvers and then go find a successful miner and rob him. There was one particular gang of frontier rowdies who opted to follow this latter path. They were known as the Triscuit Gang. Now, this name sounds a bit like a Disney movie from the late 1960s, right? Maybe a sequel to the Apple Dumpling Gang? But in reality, these guys were anything but lovable. They were named not after a yet-to-be-invented Nabisco snack cracker, but rather after brothers Jack and Henry Triscuit. In their little band were three other thugs, Fred Cooper, Miles Hearn, and Chris Slover. The story of the Triscuit Gang's last day is a bit fuzzy. I have not been able to track down a solid source for the details. A visit to the Josephine County Historical Society in Grants Pass might yield further details, but historians at the Historical Society have been looking into this for some time now, actually, without being able to confirm its details. It's possible, actually it's rather likely, that the story has been exaggerated and distorted so much over the years of retelling that it's crossed the line from history to legend. But the folklore itself is a kind of history. And so with that in mind, here's the gist of the legend of the Triscuit Gang's last stand. In early August of 1852, the Triscuiteros were on the run. They'd robbed a few people in California, as guys like them are wont to do, and were heading north with some armed and angry citizens on their tails, as citizens robbed by guys like them are wont to do. They were trying to lose themselves in the wilderness for a while, and so, of course, Southern Oregon was perfect. Well, they arrived one afternoon in a little town called Sailor's Diggin's, which today is just a ghost town. It's known as Waldo. About 5 miles north of the border with California, near the present-day town of Cave Junction, Sailor's Diggin's was essentially an overgrown mining camp, but it was booming. At a time when the entire state of Oregon had fewer than 10,000 occupants, Sailor's Diggin's was home to several thousand. The mountains nearby were especially rich, and on that particular day, almost every able-bodied man was out working them. The five bandits quickly found the saloon and went inside and started drinking their stolen gold. After a time, nicely sozzled, they wandered out into the street. Probably they were contemplating the need to get out of Sailor's Diggin's immediately. A town that size would be the first place the posse would check when trying to get a fix on them. Maybe it was this thought that made Fred Cooper snap. Bandits aren't known for self-discipline. Maybe he wanted, more than anything, to hang around that saloon all afternoon, leisurely drinking and flirting and maybe hiring some female companionship for the evening, all those things that bad guys dream about doing with their ill-gotten gains. Maybe he was standing there outside that nice little saloon just getting madder and madder at having to leave and plunge into the woods and start poking around for a tree to sleep under. Maybe. Nobody knows, really. What is known, or at any rate what is reported, is that instead of heaving a heavy sigh and heading for the city limits, he pulled his pistol and, without a word, gunned down a random citizen who was walking down the street minding his own business. The rest of the gang leaped into action, if that's the right word. The five of them stormed down the street, simply killing everyone they saw. According to one account, at least two women were raped as well. This detail doesn't ring true, however, given the apparent haste with which the gang members were fixing to get out of town, as it were. But as they were leaving town, they did pause, hustle down to the assaying depot, and clean it out. They got roughly $75,000 worth of freshly minted gold. This they loaded onto two stolen horses, and off they went. Now, Sailor's Diggins was right in the middle of the mining action. Many of the miners could hear the gunfire and knew something was very wrong. By the time the Triscuit gang was leaving town, they were starting to arrive, probably with loaded weapons in hand. The 17 dead bodies still bleeding in the streets were their wives and children and aged relatives. You can imagine how they reacted. All it took was one well-hidden survivor to yell, "They went that away!" and the chase was on. Weighed down with almost 250 pounds of gold, the bandits weren't moving very fast, and the posse soon caught them up. The gang members must have been surprised at how quickly the angry citizens got on their trail. After a short pursuit, the bad guys turned at bay on the top of a little hill just outside O'Brien. I haven't been able to learn anything about the ensuing firefight. Presumably at least a few of the miners were killed. After all, the Triscuit gang were professional gunmen and were able to pick the place where they made their last stand. I also don't know if the bad guys tried to surrender. It's certainly possible that they didn't. All they had to look forward to was humiliation and hanging, if they were lucky. In any case, when the shooting stopped, four gang members were dead, one was dying, and there was no sign anywhere of the 250 pounds of gold dust that they'd jacked from the depot. To this day, that gold has never been recovered, or rather, if it has, whoever found it was remarkably discreet about it. Treasure hunters still come to the O'Brien area to look for it. Most of them assume the gang hid it somewhere on the hill where they made their final stand. But it seems far more likely, doesn't it, that they squirreled it away earlier when they first realized they were being pursued? It's a lot harder to run from an angry posse when you're leading a pack horse. If that's the case, it could be almost anywhere in the woods between Waldo and O'Brien, probably within a dozen yards of the road. That stash, if it really exists, would be worth about $5.5 million today. But of course, we are talking about a lost gold story, and you know how they are. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. What you've been listening to is one of more than 500 stories originally created and published in newspaper columns in first-run syndication between 2008 and today. You can read them all at offbeatoregon.com. Offbeat Oregon is a division of Pulp Lit Productions, pulp-lit.com, which is a boutique publishing house owned and operated by yours truly, specializing in audiobook and multimedia editions of the work of the classic pre-war pulp writers. This podcast is covered under Creative Commons license type CC by SA 4.0. Basically, that means you can do anything you want with the content. Reprint it, remix it, add to it, songify it, post it on your blog, fire up the old Cessna and skywrite it, whatever you want to do, as long as you A, give me credit for it, and B, whatever you make is also released under a Creative Commons license. But hey, if you need either A or B waived, hit me up, fj@offbeatoregon.com. Don't let my old middle school principal fool you. I actually do play well with others. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Questions, critiques, ideas for a future episode, or maybe you'd like to get together and have a cup of coffee or a pint of Hammerhead and talk history, email me at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it, and the next one will be a Friday episode, which means it'll be brand new. So until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.